were they the same Indians that followed all the way out?
No. You know, we used to ask her that. I expected you to ask that because me and my brothers would always say, Mother, was you sure that wasn't the same Indians following you? No. No, they weren't. They were Indians. And they'd make sign language. Way back. Told. Ring. Papa. And the next one would do the same. So they were, they'd send a man out to notify Indians along the way. So that was one of the miracles of the plains.
You were telling me that this Bishop Evans, the reason that your mother did not get any support from the church was because of your mother's younger sister. That's how we got on that story. Could you go back and tell me what you were going to tell me about Bishop Evans and your wife's sister?
Yes, my wife's sister, the oldest of them, was a beautiful girl. Beautiful girl. She hadn't. Well, I could show you her picture after she was old and married. Had hair that hung down to her waist. And she had so much she had to be in four braids. She'd hang four there and one on each side. And a beautiful woman. I have one of the old tintype pictures of her. But he wanted her for wife. And Mother said, no, no, she's too young. I was too young to marry. I think that's the reason that she had the two miscarriages. She was just too young. And the meanness the treatment of her father's first wife had started and the baby would come. But she, and so he had a hatred towards Mother.
And therefore they did not give your family any support while your father was in prison?
No. There was only the one ward. Bishop Evans, I guess he had seven wives, so I guess he felt that he was doing his share. No, I don't think the bishop ever come to visit Mother in the year that Father was in prison. His brother did. His younger brother, Israel Evans, came several times and bring Mother potatoes. But that was potatoes and garden stuff, you know.
Did this hatred affect your family that they maybe quit going to church or were cut off from the church?
Oh, reason? No. No, Mother was cut off. She was cut off the church because she was... she moved out of the fort wall. That's before they were married. She didn't want to be up there and cooped up in the fort wall. And so she moved out and come up here and homesteaded, yes, with Father's help. He'd met her because he was one that used to go and see her. And Bishop Evans once or twice went and see him, but they were all support. They couldn't have helped much. But she says she didn't remember of her bushel of grain or anything that they ever give her, only a few potatoes.
Would you tell me a little about your father's life after he got out of prison?
Yes, let me go up to the bathroom. You see, they had quite a bit of difficulty because of Father's prison record for polygamy. And under the law, a polygamous woman was a reprobate. She couldn't own property. So when Father was sent to prison, She gave all of her property to a lady by the name of Goodwin. She was an old lady too. And she was a polygamist, but no one knew about it. But they sympathized with one another and they'd help one another. So she turned all of her property because they were going to confiscate it because she wasn't even an American citizen. She was just an old polygamist. The only way that she can get it is to buy. So she turned all of this estate over to this Sister Goodwin. And while Father was in the prison, she had to let go of a little bit of it. This fellow up on the corner right where this old service station used to be up here. That was Davis. His name was Davis. He bought a little corner there off her. But to make it legal, she sold it for $1. Hmm. And sold the whole estate. And then when he come out of prison, that was redeemed. And she got a legal deed then. You see, it wasn't a homestead anymore. Sister Goodwin gave her a legal deed.
Mm-hmm.
See, they worked together, especially the women. So maybe they'd come and take my home if that was put on the tape now.
I doubt it.
But that was one of the hardships that they had to figure too. They had to overcome these hardships. And they did it. They did a good job. But Father didn't hold any grudge against anybody. I think I take after Father in that way. If he ever hated a man, no one ever knew it.
What did your father do for a living up to the time he went to work for Johnson's Army?
Well, I guess he was a financier. He learned everything pertaining to farming and horticulture and agriculture and everything else from Bishop, while he was a member of the household of Lord Bridgeport. So he was very highly educated. I have his diary. You should read some of that.
That would be interesting reading.
And a beautiful handwriting. And he was an expert. This is between you and I, but because everyone claims it, but Father was the only one that had a transit. He brought from England. And he surveyed all over irrigation projects for the church. Always free, never charged him anything.
Gosh.
He even went up into Idaho, where the church started colonies there. He'd survey their water system.
Are these things in his diary?
Yes, just merely mentioned. Father didn't boast of anything. If you had to get an answer to a question from Father, you had to ask him the question. Then usually he was half Irish, you know, and he'd start telling you an Irish story, and then in that story he would answer his question.
Use parables then?
Yes. He was a wonderful man. He was
You said he became quite wealthy working through Johnson's Army and for Johnson's
yes.
Army. What happened to all this wealth and stocks and bonds?
He invested in land. He took up land up here on the bench, a section of ground. Then there's a, he gave a quarter section each to two of his neighbors, and he kept the half section. Then when they was trying to get funds to start the sugar factory, and after the, he worked in a half dozen ways raising money for the sugar company. In no end of ways that he would sell the stock for the sugar company. He never made anything on it. But he traded when they needed, they couldn't get enough contracts to run the factory, sugar beet. So he traded the entire half section of ground up there to the sugar company to raise sugar beets on with irrigation rights and everything for stock. Stock was worthless, but he paid them, I think he, $5 a share he gave them as his share of the help on the sugar factory. Same with the Provo woolen mills. I have stock certificates that thick, where he'd give $150 when the mills were running and they couldn't even pay their help. Father would step in.
That stack's about an inch thick you just showed me.
Yes.
Would you tell me about what year they started the sugar plant and who started it?
They started it, that was in 1890. 92 was the first run of the sugar, wasn't it, Eunice? 1892 was the first sugar run. 91. Well, I missed it 1 year. Well, the flour mill, the woolen mill, and the sugar. Thomas R. Cutler was the big wheel in the sugar factory. He was a bishop of Lehigh. He was the second bishop of Lehigh before they were divided. He was, up until his death, he was still the bishop. But then what she has reference to, the church sent, they weren't getting a very good grade of sugar. So they sent James H. Gardner, who was the son of the old Bishop Gardner in Salt Lake, to the Hawaiian Islands. They were making cane sugar there. And he was to study the principle of crystallization, how to, the temperatures and things. And when he filled his mission, in fact, he didn't stay very long because he went for that purpose, but the church sent him on a mission. I don't know whether they get rates or how they did it, but it's because of finance that he went as a missionary. But the church had a lot to do with the sugar manufacturing in the Hawaiian Islands. I don't maybe know whether you knew that or not.
No, sir.
But the church was promoters of that, for their membership, largely. But he was sent there to study, and they, the French people started the factory there, but our church supported it. But and James H. Gardner was put in superintendent. He went as a missionary, but through the influence of the church and their interest in it, he was put in superintendent there of the sugar factory, so he could study the steps making in sugar making. Then they sent and got a man by the name of Dyer right from France. And he came, and James H. Gardner was put in superintendent of the sugar factory, with Dyer as his head foreman. So the two of them together made the sugar factory go.
And they were all organized under the auspices of the church.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Same with the cotton, the woolen mills. I have a stack of, in one of those books there, of certificates where they'd get short. They'd come to a few fellows like Father, buy 100 shares of stock. It was a good investment. He knew it would always be worth what he paid for it, and there was a possibility. So he didn't lose anything, but he'd buy stock to make an improvement on these places.
Was your father a wealthy man then, after these investments?
Yes, Father made each one of his children wealthy, but I'm the only one that was, the neighbors used to say, was worth shooting. I had five brothers. Joy of the interest they took in me when I was called on a mission. Parents were long since dead, and I'd worked two or three three years in the mines, but I'd saved a little bit of money. And I was mining when I got my mission call. I had a contract up here in Alpine, 500-foot tunnel. I got in on a 300-foot, and the impulse comes to go to Lehigh. Well, what in the devil would I go to Lehigh for?
Could we save this story for a little later when we get to your mission parts?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You told me that you... Father set all his sons up in business. Did these businesses go well? Did they all make a lot of money?
They made a lot of money, but it take an awful lot of money to be perpetually drunk and playing the horses all the time.
Mm-hmm. And they lost most of their money then?
All of it. Come back, I paid the debt on my second brother was still owned in American Fork.
I have a few questions I'd like to go back and ask you, things you've already told me. Did the mob kill your mother's mother? I wasn't too sure about it. You said your...
Well, she died through the effects of it. She was giving birth to children, and the mob rushed in and burned the house down. She died a few hours after. She was buried there in, right on their old homestead.
Did she tell you many stories about mob violence? Could you relate some of those?
When they came to New York, my grandfather had a brother in America, in Missouri. Cumberland County, Missouri, Richmond, Cumberland County. And he, of course, went down there. And my grandfather had married. I always understood, but Eunice, through research, found he had married a cousin, but in her stories to me, it was always her aunt. Her mother's sister that her father married that was older. Because after he'd married the woman, the little girl didn't know about it. So when the father came home, he says, "Mary, I'm going to take you to see your new mother." And she was all elated, you know, and built up to going to see her mother. Death didn't mean much to her, you know. She's just a child. So when she got there, her father knocked on the door, and this lady came and says, "Well, here's your mother." She says, "No, that's not my mother. That's what was her name, Eunice?"
Belle.
"Aunt Belle." And he says, "Well, she's going to be your mother now. Your mother's dead." That's where that part of it come in. But they went on down to Missouri because Father's uncle was there. And he said that they had been driven but they'd move over to the west side of Missouri and were at peace. And he, when they got to New York, they corresponded, and he told him to come down there. So he went down to Richmond, Missouri. And they got there towards evening, and after supper, his uncle said to him, there's quite a show going on down on the public square. There's a whipping going on. And he says, would you like to go down and see it? And he says, a whipping? And he says, what is that? And he says, oh, you'll find out when you get there. So he went along. And it was after dark, and they all had bonfires around, and there was a Negro tied to a stake, his arms way up in the air, and it right in the center, and fires around him. And after a while, here come in a man with a great big whip, and he'd snap that whip, you know, and hit him, and the blood would spurt. He'd walk around the other side and do the same. And he says, finally, he got up close and gave him great big gashes, and he just laid the flesh up. He said the blood was just running down. And he said his father couldn't stand it. He went up and grabbed that fella and took the whip away from him and says, tell me, how would you like it? And cracked him like with a whip. And the mob went wild. But his uncle says, here,